does it mean to be truly fit? Recent studies cited in the New York Times suggest that how fast you can run a mile in middle age can be a predictor of your future heart disease. But is this true? And what are the best markers and ways to gauge one's fitness level? And of course, to improve it. Well, joining us this morning to help us understand this is Dr. Carol Sames, the director of the Vitality Fitness Program and assistant professor in the College of Health Professions at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Carol. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Linda. Good to be here.
I'm so interested in this because I'm clearly one of these people who tries to stay what I consider fit. But is it true that how fast you can run a mile is a predictor of fitness or heart health for that matter?
Well, these two studies were an attempt to begin the dialogue on, can we look at fitness in middle age by looking at treadmill times? And can we see if there's any prediction for a reduction in risk of cardiovascular disease later in life?
What do we mean by middle age? Let's start there.
Well, middle age, these individuals that were first tested were in their 30s and early 40s. And they were given a treadmill test to see how fast and how far they could walk. And so they had a baseline measure. And the one study then looked at 45 years old, 55 years old, and 65 years old and compared cardiovascular death to treadmill time. And basically what they found was that individuals who were more high fit, meaning that they could walk faster on the treadmill, seemed to have lower incidences of cardiovascular disease at age 45, 65, and 55 years of age.
So they were looking at this as a particular predictor or an indicator, an index, that's similar to perhaps your cholesterol level or your high blood pressure? Were those?
Absolutely. In fact, what they found was that fitness, this concept of fitness, was just as powerful as cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes.
So when you say fitness, I mean, this is the question that's always raised. I mean, first of all, how you measure it clearly, but what does it mean? What do we mean when we say fitness?
Well, that's exactly what these two studies were attempting to do, because we know that exercise does have some type of cardiovascular prevention. We know that from longitudinal research, the Framingham study, for instance. But what these researchers were attempting to do was somehow quantify fitness. And so they chose to select treadmill time, how fast an individual could walk. And that was their attempt to try to come up with a marker at which they could then identify people as low fitness, meaning slower walk times, versus high fitness, faster treadmill times.
So the concept here was that if you are measured to be more fit in your 40s, that the likelihood of heart disease is lower when you hit 80.
Death from cardiovascular disease, yes, at 45, 55, and 65. And in this particular study, they looked at men. So it was 11,000 men only. So we can't address the women.
Okay, well, that's something obviously they're going to have to do more research on.
Absolutely.
So does it seem then that the exercise that you do in your 40s is relevant then to basically be a preventive measure?
Well, that's one of the questions raised by these researchers. You know, this is an association, so it's not causal. And what we don't know is that somehow are individuals that are more fit at middle age tending then to be more fit when they're older. That was not measured. Their fitness levels later in life was not measured. Maybe individuals that are more fit have different dietary.
So there are a lot of potential.
There could be other confounding variables
exactly.
That are in there, but this is a start. This is an interesting start to say that you can have one test measured in middle age, looking at fitness, ability to divide people into fitness groups, and see that there is an association later in life in a reduction of death from cardiovascular disease.
So what were the exact numbers? I think somewhere I read that a 10-minute mile for a middle-aged man, meaning being able to make a mile in 10 minutes, and a 12-minute mile for a woman.
They were some cutoffs. One of the things that you run into is certainly as we age, we're not going to be walking and running as fast. So they were trying to attempt to say, you know, a time at when I'm 45 is going to be different than the time I'd need to hit when I'm 55 and then consequently at 65. So the numbers are not precise, but we certainly know that individuals that were walking slower had more risk of
the interesting factor here, though, one confounding variable strikes me is that there could be other reasons, for example, joint issues or you know, arthritis or other things that, you know, I know usually at 40 you may not be hampered by arthritis, but in some cases you might.
Oh, absolutely. This was just looking at walking. So what happens if we have individuals who cannot walk? So is there a bicycle test? Is there an upper body ergometer test? So other ways that we could measure fitness. This specifically was just looking at treadmill walking, and you're absolutely right. There are some difficulties with that specific indicator of fitness.
What's your overall feeling about the studies?
Well, I think what this does is confirm the things that we know. But I think what's exciting about it is that we see that this somehow goes into later life, that one test can actually look at an association later in life. And so it kind of confirms that. And I think the other strong point, takeaway message from that particular study is that you can have other risk factors. And when you add fitness, even if I already have hypertension, high cholesterol, and diabetes, by adding fitness, I can reduce my risk for cardiovascular disease. And that's pretty powerful, and certainly shows you that the strength of being fit and what it has to offer.
What other factors, in your experience, may contribute to someone's fitness level? I mean, in other words, are there genetic factors that play a role in terms of fitness, apart from how much exercise you do?
Well, I think, you know, in our society, you know, you just have individuals that just don't value the idea of moving. And when we talk about fitness, I think a lot of people think of it as arduous exercise. Really, what we're talking about here is moving, all right? We want to get people talking about moving. We don't want people to say, hey, you know what, I cannot run a 10-minute mile, so I'm going to give up. What we want to say to that person is, hey, can you add activity into your day? Can we gradually increase? Because we know that bodies are meant to move. So I think the big thing is the mindset, the way we approach the things that we do. Our society is set up to be somewhat sedentary. So I think it's really a mindset. What can I do? Not what I can't do.
Well, hold that thought, because I'd like to talk a lot more about specifically how people might be able to engineer their lives going forward so they might be able to find more opportunities to be fit. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. So please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with my guest, Dr. Carol Sames, and we're talking about fitness and how we measure it. Now, Carol, before the break, we were talking about those two studies that came out that found a correlation between the time it takes to run a mile in middle age and your overall risk of heart problems later on. So it appears from the studies that whether you can run a mile, at what level you can, the speed at which you can run a mile really is predictive of later problems. So it suggests that fitness in middle age really is predictive of overall health.
Right, exactly.
So is it similar, that type of fitness level measure, similar in strength to other factors that you might be looking at?
Well, certainly. It that was what was fairly amazing with both of these studies, that it was just as strong a predictor of cardiovascular mortality as high cholesterol, hypertension, diabetes, positive family history for cardiovascular disease.
But they also found something, apart from the fact that it was a predictor, it also suggested that it was preventive.
Correct. So that when you added fitness into the mix, even if I had four or five risk factors for cardiovascular disease, it still reduced my overall risk for cardiovascular disease. So that when we added fitness in, it reduced my risk, despite the fact that I have a number of risk factors, traditional risk factors.
So that's really very, very significant. What you're saying is if you have high cholesterol, even if you're attempting to treat it, and you also have hypertension, if you train or exercise such that your fitness level improves as measured by how fast you can walk on a treadmill, for example, that you really do, in a sense, counteract some of the risks of these other conditions.
Exactly. And that's extraordinarily powerful and certainly helpful from a clinical standpoint.
I noticed that that the results of the studies found that individuals who were placed in the high fitness category had a 10% risk of dying from cardiovascular disease. And this was very staggering, shocking, when compared to a 30% risk for those in the low fitness category.
And that's tremendously statistically significant, 10% versus 30%.
It should be highly motivating.
It should be.
The problem with motivation clearly is what we face every day. Our culture is such that people may know better and understand the value of exercise, but rarely, or it's very hard to get people to start an exercise program. How do you get people to start? I mean, in your work.
Well, I really think part of it is about education, because so many people say, you know what, I'm not going to go out there and run, and they shouldn't start out by running, or I can't go out there and walk. So instead of focusing on the things you can't do, what can you do? How can you bring activity into your daily life? And so is that just a matter of household activities? Is that just a matter of trying to get myself to, if it's possible, take the stairs, walk a little bit further when I park my car? How can I add activity? Don't concentrate on what you can't do, but just think about, I need to make activity part of my daily lifestyle. And that's the key. And then also to explain to people that, you know what, we're all busy. You know, nobody has any time to do anything. So how can I add this into my routine? And that's really the key, adding it into the routine so it looks seamless and trying to be active. And that's the starting point. And then I increase from there.
It's interesting because the study was looking at people in middle age in terms of the point at which they were measuring to be predictive for later age. But clearly, if you've developed those kinds of habits earlier in life and carried them all through your life, it's obviously going to be that much more beneficial. So you're not just talking to middle-aged people out there. You're really suggesting that that kind of level of fitness or activity level is important from early age, from childhood on up.
And not just that, the fact that you can start at any point in time. Because a lot of the more recent research has suggested that even individuals that are 80 and 85 years old can increase their cardiovascular fitness and strength. And so it can be started at any point in time. You know, so many things in life need to be started when you're young. And if you don't do it when you're young, well, tough. But in this example, you can start fitness at any point.
I think that's very, very hopeful, because I also think that some people might write it off and say, well, if I'm 40 and I'm in a low fitness category, or I, you know, which I want to talk about also as to how you know, but I might not, it doesn't pay. I'm over the hill. There's no reason to try. And you're saying that at any point in your life, it's crucial to try. It's very beneficial to try and institute some kind of a regimen where you are more active.
Right. And you'll see benefits. That's the great thing.
So how do you know you're not fit? Well, what are some indicators to know if you don't have a treadmill handy and you're not involved in a study? How do you determine that you're in a low fitness category?
Well, ideally, you want to be able to do 20 to 30 minutes of continuous activity. That's the goal. And that doesn't mean everybody's going to start there. Some people can't start at that type of duration. So they might just start at 1 minute and then take a rest. You know, 1 minute of gardening, 1 minute of cleaning, rest. And that's fine. But the idea is that we want to get to the point where we can do 20 to 30 minutes of continuous activity. And it doesn't have to be walking or running. It can be things like gardening. Okay. It can be things like
how about
house
dusting?
Cleaning. Yeah, well, not one of my favorite things to do, but it is continuous and repetitive.
So make that point. So continuous and repetitive.
Right. So we're looking at cardiovascular activity. And so people need to start at whatever level, and understand that it's a slow process. We slowly are able to do more and more activity. And in the beginning, I might not be able to do 20 minutes all in one block of time. I might have to break it up. And research suggests that that's just as beneficial, setting it up into small blocks, as doing one large 20 to 30 minute block.
I think that's key, because I think people look at this mountain of, you know, they look at it as a mountain to climb. Well, I've got to do a half an hour a day, and all in one block can seem daunting. But getting back to what I was asking before, what I'm curious about is how does an individual know that they're not fit? In other words, what are some of the signs and symptoms of not being fit at 40 or 45?
You know, if you are able to walk and you notice that after 2 or 3 minutes, you're very winded,
shortness of breath, for example.
Absolutely, shortness
and
of
fatigue.
And fatigue, yes.
But some of that could be more mental than physical, and that's, I think, the rub.
Well, that's the problem. If we don't use our muscles, what happens is that when we go to use them, they require more oxygen to do the same activity, hence the shortness of breath and fatigue. So, you know, you know, I think most people inherently can tell. They say, you know what, I can't get much activity done. You know, I'm having a hard time just doing the things around my home. And I'm not talking strenuous things, just simple things. And when you get to that point, you're like, you know what, I am low fitness.
Yeah, because I think that most people don't necessarily have a clear sense of where they fall on the fitness spectrum. And they probably also then, therefore, don't appreciate that the risks that you know, poor fitness has for overall health. So clearly these are important messages we need to get across.
Right. And it's not just cardiovascular health. Just think about what low fitness does to me. The inability to interact maybe with my family members, the inability to get things done, maybe from a work perspective, maybe playing with the grandchildren. You know, low fitness doesn't just impact cardiovascular disease. Certainly we're talking about that now, but it invades every aspect of our life.
So one thing I think we would want to caution people, though, is if you have a thought that you want to test to see if you have a low fitness versus a moderate or high fitness level, you probably don't want to go out there and try to run a mile if you've never done it on the first shot.
Absolutely not. You want to start, where am I at now? You might want to say, if you're able to walk, how many minutes can I walk before I get tired? Write that down. Okay, this is how many minutes. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to work on increasing slowly those number of minutes that I can walk.
Tell me what some of the problems with some of these studies were, though. I noted somewhere that there were limitations, like the participants that they studied were largely Caucasian, for one. And
yeah, this research came, both studies came out of the Cooper Institute in Dallas, Texas. And so from the one study, you had all males, so you really couldn't discuss any changes in females. You're looking at individuals that are, yes, mostly Caucasian. You're also looking at individuals from a higher economic standpoint. One of the issues is that when you're looking at death from cardiovascular disease, they were looking at death certificates. And when you look at older individuals, sometimes you see a preponderance of cardiovascular disease. You just assume that that's what they died from. So that could have been an issue. So there certainly was some limitations, as there is in all research. But it is, again, a starting point.
Mm-hmm. And you hope there'll be more research to support this whole notion.
There certainly will be, because there are a number of longitudinal studies that are going on right now.
So what goes on at the Institute for Human Performance? What type of, what do you offer people in this Vitality program, and who's eligible?
Well, we have the Vitality Fitness program, and essentially it's a exercise program, both a traditional land-based exercise program and a water program for individuals who have chronic diseases, disabilities, and seniors. And we will tend to attract individuals that say, you know what, I get it, I need to be fit, but I have no idea how to do it. And so they come to us. What we do is we do an assessment. We will send a form over to their healthcare providers saying, do you have any restrictions that you'd like to place upon them? Is it okay for them to participate in the study, in this program? And then we start them in the program based on where they're at now, based on their limitations and what their specific goals are. Some people need that security of having supervised people. Some people like the idea of saying, I'm in the 8:15 class, I mark it down on my calendar and I will be there. They like that structure. Mm-hmm. And for individuals maybe that have walking difficulties, we have the water program. And so, or individuals that are really deconditioned, or individuals that just can't do a lot of land activity.
So this is private pay, or is
this
insurance
private
covered?
Pay. The program is $45 a month, which is very reasonable considering that you have individuals that are clinically trained exercise physiologists.
Mm-hmm. So that's great. That's amazing, actually. So anybody can apply for the program?
Anybody can contact me. My number is 464-9992, and we can take the steps. Or if they have questions, or if they want to come see the building, see what the program's about, we'd be glad to either mail them information or have them come in.
Sounds great, Carol. And we hope we'll get more people up off the couch in general with all of this information. Well, Carol Sames, Director of Vitality Fitness Program and Assistant Professor in the College of Health Professions at Upstate Medical University, thanks so much for joining us. It's always informative and always inspirational. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYR.